Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And when I say jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC, I mean we are looking back at the absolute electric card that was UFC 311. It did not disappoint. I'm going to be honest, it was fun. It was feisty. We had good fights all around. You could argue it was a perfect main card. Honestly, one of the best main cards I've seen in a while. Very fulfilling card. We're going to be looking back at all 13 fights and talking about our thoughts and what's next for all the fighters, all the winners, all the losers, and what could be potentially the next few title fights we see down the line. We're also going to be looking at the NFL divisional round games. All four of them are complete. We know the four teams in the conference championship games next weekend. We're going to be giving our reactions to those games. Of course, new UFC fights, new things in pop culture. We got a lot of fun stuff for you on today's episode. And I say that we kick things off with how we always kick things off, and that is new UFC fights. And since we last spoke, there have been three new fights announced, and all three of them are big ones. All three of them are big ones. Our first one going down at UFC 314 in Miami, Florida, April 12th. So we know we're going back to Miami for UFC 314, a pay-per-view, April 12th. It'll be a welterweight fight between the number 8-ranked Gilbert Burns and the number 12-ranked Michael Morales. Gilbert Burns, 22-8 professionally, 15-8 in the UFC, ranked number 8. I mean, he's beaten Jorge Masvidal. He's beaten Wonderboy Thompson. He's beaten Tyrone Woodley. He has beaten former champions. He fought Kamaru Usman for the belt. He has taken on Hamza Chimaev in a fight of the year contender back in, gosh, what was that, 2021? Was that? Or 2022? It was a long time ago. But I mean, Gilbert Burns, an absolute savage. As for Michael Morales, 17-0, 5-0 in the UFC. He is undefeated, coming off the biggest win of his career with a round one TKO of Neil Magny. He's also exciting on the come up. This should be good. This should be a good one. Michael Morales, 24 years young. As for Gilbert Burns, he nears the age of 40. I believe he's 38 right now. So this could be a changing of the guard, or it could be a chance for Gilbert Burns to redeem himself and move back into the rankings. If it's me, I'm going Michael Morales. He's finally getting a top 10 opponent. Very deserved, and I'll be excited to see what he does. He reps Ecuador. Gilbert Burns reps Brazil. Now, here was my favorite announcement of the weekend, my favorite fight that they announced. It is the main event and co-main event for UFC 313 going down March 8th in Las Vegas, which I may be in Las Vegas for this pay-per-view, which means you already know I would have to go. I mean, I would have to go. I would just have to go if this was the case. But here are your two fights, the co-main event for UFC 313 in Las Vegas, March 8th, a five-round co-main event between the number 3-ranked lightweight Justin the Highlight Reel Gaethje and the number 6-ranked Dan the Hangman Hooker. What a perfect fight, and what about two savages who just haven't fought each other? You know, they've just mal-fought everyone. They've both fought in Poirier. They've both fought in Michael Chandler. They have fought in, who else have they been fighting? Justin Gaethje's been fighting Rafael Fiziev. Dan Hooker's been fighting Islam Makhachev, and finally these two are colliding with each other. Justin Gaethje coming off of his less than stellar, I'd say very unfortunate loss to Max Holloway at UFC 300. As for Dan Hooker, coming off a fight of the year contender against Matheus Gamrot back in September, I'm here for it. I absolutely love this. It is going to be fantastic. It's going to be bloody, and these two, this is a huge opportunity to get back into the title picture. The winner will be ranked number 3 in the world. I don't know who to choose. I truly don't, because I know how good Justin Gaethje is, but I also know how good Dan Hooker is. But I mean, you know, it's one thing to swing with Matheus Gamrot if you're Dan Hooker, but it's another thing to swing with Justin Gaethje. And we don't know how Justin Gaethje is after getting knocked out cold. He's had almost a full year to recover. We'll see how he is. And the main event, it's about time. It was inevitable. The light heavyweight championship matchup between Alex Poatan Pereira, your reigning defending light heavyweight champion, and the number 1-ranked Magomed Ankalaev. Magomed 20-1 professionally. He is 11-1 in the UFC, and he is on an 11-fight winning streak. I think it's either a 12 or 13-fight unbeaten streak. I think it's a 13-fight unbeaten streak since he has a draw and a no contest. But other than that, 11 straight wins. No one's been able to beat this guy. I mean, he knocked out Johnny Walker a full year ago, beat Alexander Rokic in, when was that? Was that November? Either November, I think actually it was October. He beat Alexander Rokic, also holds wins over Volkan Ozdemir, Paul Craig. Who else do I want? Thiago Santos. I mean, Magomed Ankalaev has beaten the best of best. Should have beaten Jan Blachowicz. He should be champion right now, but This is going to be an exciting matchup. Para coming off his fight, Fighter of the Year. He was your Men's Fighter of the Year for 2024. Three fights, both all title fights, all main events, all knockouts. Can't get much better than that. I'm a little torn on who I'm going to go with because it's just one of those things where it's like Alex Para has been so dominant, you know, 9-1 in the UFC, undefeated at light heavyweight. But Magomed Ankalaev has just been waiting so long. He's felt like he should have gotten this a long time ago, and now he's getting it. It's almost like it's almost inevitable that he's going to be the one to beat him. We'll have to see, though. It should be exciting, but that is your UFC 313 main event. It just don't get much better than that. Truly, it doesn't. I'm so pumped for that. I don't know what other fights they're going to add to that card. There's nothing much right now that I've heard of that's going to be on that card, but I'm sure they can juice it up and give us some good fights. So those are all your new UFC fights, only three, but they are three massive ones. 314, I mean, Michael Morales versus Gilbert Burns, I doubt that's even the co-main event. They're definitely going to load up that 314 card in Miami. But I'll tell you what else is loaded, and that is the world of pop culture, courtesy of Discussing Film. Every single week on the podcast, I should say, every episode, we look at the top 10 new things in pop culture, courtesy of Discussing Film, which you can follow on any social media site. They have millions of followers and are the number one site to find all your pop culture news. So, kicking things off, we have our first peek at Gabriel Mock's return as Harvey Specter in a new Suits series. That's right, Harvey Specter returning. They're making a new Suits series. Suits had a big return ever since it was posted on Netflix, and now they've been clamoring for a remake, or it's not even a remake. I think it's just a continuation of it, but in a new area. I don't know. Should be interesting, but I haven't watched Suits in the first place. It's been recommended to me. I know my girlfriend's been watching it, so I'll have to get around to watching it and maybe watch this new series. But good for Gabriel Mock back as his main man, Harvey Specter. Number two, TikTok is already in the process of returning. I think it's already back. You know, of course, the TikTok ban has been the main talk of the town, and I wouldn't be mad if it was banned. Really, I wouldn't. I mean, it does not make me more productive. I've never really committed fully to making videos, and I've made a couple here and there. But I just think, you know, the Chinese government has already stolen so much data, so much American data. It's almost irreversible of what they've done. So if anything, they just ban it, they get rid of it, and we move on to another app. But just some people on there, it just kills me. This is stuff they post, and it's just mind-boggling. So I think it may be better if we do without this. I can't believe that. You know, when I was growing up, I didn't really have social media until I was in, I think, fifth grade or something. And to think that there are six-year-olds making TikToks, that was just crazy to me. You know, I'm sounding like a boomer, okay? That's what I sound like. Number three, Moana 2 has passed $1 billion worldwide. The film was originally a TV series planned to go straight to Disney+. Instead, they made it into a movie, and now they've made $1 billion, which means I can guarantee you're going to see a Moana 3, a Moana 4, a Moana 5. You're going to see Moanas until you die if it's going to be making Disney this much movie. Number four, One of Them Days, starring Kiki Palmer and SZA, opens with an $11.6 million domestic opening on a $14 million budget. It is one of the highest rated comedies in years with 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. That just doesn't seem right. That doesn't seem right that Kiki Palmer and SZA are having the best comedy in years. I'm going to have to, yeah, I'm not going to look at that. I'm not even going to look at that. So we're gonna leave that now. Number five, the sand drawing sequence in How to Train Your Dragon has been shown in a preview, as well as Hook Fang, as this, of course, they are making a new live-action How to Train Your Dragon movie. I am so pumped to see that. June 13th, it comes out. You best bet I'm going to be in the theater, okay? That is one of my favorite trilogies of all time. How to Train Your Dragon 1, phenomenal. How to Train Your Dragon 2, one of my favorite films of all time. And How to Train Your Dragon 3, I don't think it's as good as the other two, but that's like saying How to Train Your Dragon 1 is an 8 out of 10, How to Train Your Dragon 2 is a 9 out of 10, then How to Train Your Dragon 3 is like a 7.9 out of 10. I think it was a perfect way to end the series, but I just think the villain they chose just wasn't as menacing as they had built up in the second one, especially with Drogo. Oh my gosh, he was such a good villain. Number 6, Adam Scott says he watched Tom Cruise running videos to prepare for the Severance Season 2 opening. A robot arm was used for some shots. It used green screen, and he ran on a treadmill for a number of shots, and it took 5 months to film, and it was shot in 10 different parts. Holy cow. Holy cow, Severance, this weird, wonky series I've been seeing a lot of. I'm seeing a lot of clips of this. I might have to check it out, but it has some weird symbolic stuff. It has some weird symbolism. I don't know what to make of it. I don't even know what it's about, but it's kind of creepy. I don't know if I want to dabble fully. I'll have to see. It's just one of those things, like, if I have Apple TV, you know, I'll watch it, but I'm not going to go out of my way to get Apple TV to go and watch it. Number 7, the full release schedule for Invincible Season 3 has been revealed. Episodes 1 through 3 premiere on February 6th. Absolutely love it. Of course, you can follow it February 13th, 20th, 27th, March 6th, March 13th. You're going to get 8 total episodes for Season 3. Now, Invincible is fantastic. It is utterly fantastic. Season 1, super good. Season 2, top Season 1. That's just how freaking good it is. Now, Season 3, the main issue is I came to this conclusion after Season 1 is that they can make a lot of seasons of Invincible. So I just feel like, you know, Season 2, we're having more buildup. I feel like Season 3, you're going to get even more buildup. Now, mind you, the buildup isn't bad. It's not bad buildup, but nonetheless, it is still buildup. You know, we still get these big showdowns, a lot of mysteries, but there are so many subplots with the big main plot of the, you know, the Viltrumites versus Mark taking them on. It's just mind-boggling that they're able to tie this all together, and it takes a full year now. You know, it took them, three or four years to come between Season 1 and Season 2, and now it's looking like they're going to try and run this on a yearly thing. We'll have to see, but new suit. New suit for Mark in Season 3. I will be excited to watch that. That comes out in just about like 2 or 3 weeks. So, exciting stuff. Number 8, the monkey captures Stephen King's mean-spirited humor like few adaptions do, and I can appreciate that. Come for the splattery gore, stay for Theo James' hilarious yet poignant performance. Not all the humor lands, but Osgood Perkins' directorial touch continues to impress, says Andrew J. Salazar, a reviewer. The Monkey, another film from, Stephen King, which is a book he written. I don't know if I want to watch it. Of course, all of Stephen King's stuff is demonic, it's wonky. I actually just watched The Outsider. I read the book, then I watched the TV series The Outsider, and it is kind of a prime example of a TV show can be so good, yet the book is actually better. But if you're interested in a good TV series, only 10 episodes, basically if you want to watch a 10-hour movie, essentially, watch The Outsider. It's on Max. It's phenomenal, but the book is so good. I recommend the book to anyone who is interested in reading it. Number eight, Christopher Walken says he doesn't have the equipment to watch Severance on streaming. They're good enough to send me DVDs. I love that Christopher Walken, who, I don't know what is up with him. He seems like he's a weird, really weird dude, but he doesn't have, like, streaming services. He still watches stuff on DVD, so that's pretty funny, if you ask me. And I kind of like them. You know, DVDs are more fun. They're more personal than just opening a streaming app, if you want to view it like that. Number 9, we've predicted what some of the box office winners and losers will be for 2025. Discussing Film said this. Winners, they think Zootopia 2, which I might actually go see. Avatar Fire and Ash, definitely going to see that. And Michael, I have no idea what that is. Is Michael supposed to be something about, what were those movies? Scream, Halloween movies. Is that what is, like, a prequel to Halloween? Their losers they predicted are Tron, Ares, and Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning. Mission Impossible, they've just made so many movies. It's like the Fast and Furious franchise. People are just completely over it. Unless you're a diehard fan, then perfect for you. And number 9, Anthony Mackie reveals how Chris Evans was the first one to tell him Sam Wilson would be Captain America. He goes, "Have you read the new script?" I said, "No." He goes, "You don't know." And I'm like, "Damn." And, you know, being black, I'm like, "I'm gonna die. Damn." So, Anthony Mackie, good for you. You're now Captain America. Although Captain America looks like the Falcon, acts like the Falcon, but is Captain America. I might see it. I don't know. And at number 10, what should we go with? Gladiator 2 has officially passed Gladiator at the worldwide box office. Now, the reason I'm going to say that, the reason I think that that's the case, is because Gladiator 2, the tickets cost more than they did back for Gladiator. But I haven't seen Gladiator 2. I'll probably watch it when it comes out on some streaming service somewhere. But Gladiator, that first one, that is such a perfect movie. Now, it's such an untouchable movie, if you ask me. I'm very nervous to watch the sequel. And I've heard amazing things. Heard just amazing things about the sequel. But my one worry is that it just won't live up to the hype that was Gladiator, that first one. Especially since I recently watched it. Will I still feel the same passion I felt for Maximus when his wife and his son were killed unjustly and he fights his way back and he gets revenge only to die at the last second, but he's able to be rejoined with them in the afterlife? Oh my goodness, you can just sign me up to watch it again. But Gladiator 2 taking over. Gladiator. Good for them. Good for Ridley Scott. We'll definitely have to add that to our watch list. But those are the top 10 new headlines, top 10 new updates, top 10 new things in the world of pop culture. Now, we also have some new things in the NFL world, as, of course, the NFL divisional round was played this past weekend. And we had some fun games, you know. There were some fun moments in games, and I was able to catch all four of them. Now, mind you, I didn't care who won. I didn't care who won any of these games. You know, the Vikings route, it doesn't matter. But I still, you know, just rooted for good finishes. So we kick things off on Saturday. Chiefs hosting the Texans, and Texans were hanging in there. In fact, it was 7-6 at one point. And I know it was 13-6 heading into halftime, and the Texans have been hanging in there. Okay, and then the Texans go out, score a touchdown at the start of the third, then miss the extra point. They then miss the extra point, which is unfortunate. But mind you, it's 14-13. You know, we still have a game. And then, of course, the Chiefs score 10 unanswered, win the game. The Texans get this weird moment where the spread was, I think, either -9 or -9.5. And the Chiefs elect to kill the final few seconds of the clock at the end by getting a safety with their punter, and it was very weird. It really makes me think that Vegas plays a role in the NFL spectrum. It was very just, you know, when people talk about conspiracy theories, this is definitely one where there was no reason to do this, yet they still did it. It really just didn't sit right with me. But Texans put up a complete dud in the fourth quarter, lose 23-14, and the Chiefs will be going to their third straight, actually it might be more than three straight, AFC Championship game. It's just utterly insane. I think the only one they haven't gone to was that Bengals Super Bowl. So Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, their reign lives on as the Texans fall short. CJ Stroud in this one, 19-for-28, 245 yards, just couldn't really get it going, you know, through the air. You know, Nico Collins, 5 catches, 81 yards, he was good. Dalton Schultz, 4 catches, 63 yards. Xavier Hutchinson, 4 catches, 52 yards, but no touchdowns were produced. Joe Mixon on the ground, 88 yards on 18 carries for a touchdown, which is pretty good. And CJ put up 42 yards rushing. So decent stats, but not enough to get a victory for the Texans. Patrick Mahomes, 16-for-25, 177 yards and a touchdown. Kareem Hunt rushed for 44 yards and a touchdown. They were doing it more through the air. But also, they just didn't really have the ball as much, I know, for time of possession in this game, if I can find it here. You know, it was 33 and a half minutes for the Texans compared to 26 and a half for the Chiefs. So the Texans had the ball much longer and yet still couldn't put enough points. That Chiefs defense, very underrated when we talk about the successfulness of the Chiefs. The star of the entire game, though, Travis Kelce, 7 catches, 117 yards, and a touchdown. He did what he had to do. So the Chiefs, they will be hosting the team we're going to talk about in a second in the AFC Championship game. You know, I'll just say it. They're the Golden State Warriors. They're the Patriots. They're the, I don't even know who else, but they're the latest dynasty, the Bulls, if you will, of the modern era, and their reign continues. So there was that. We then had a 1-seed and 6-seed matchup as the Commanders visited the Lions in our first NFC Championship game, or NFC Divisional Round matchup, I should say. And this one, from the get-go, I mean, we get a 7-3 first quarter. 7-3 first quarter, and the Lions are winning. Okay, you know, it's somewhat exciting. You know, it was an okay first quarter. It's looking okay. We then get into the best second quarter of football I have ever seen. 4 touchdowns from the Commanders and 2 from the Lions accumulate to over 40 points scored combined in the second quarter. Insane. It was Jane Daniels was balling. Jane Daniels was balling. The Commanders team was balling. They were getting pick six. It was electric, and it's 31-21 Commanders heading into halftime. You then, you know, third quarter, they've simmered out. Lions get back to it, 31-28 heading into the fourth, and then Lions kick a field goal, and the Commanders don't give up any more points. 45-31, the biggest upset so far in the playoffs as the Commanders beat the Lions and advance the NFC Championship game. Insane. Your conference championship, if you want to get specific. But I mean, just complete shutout from the Commanders. And I mean, putting up 45 points on this Lions team, which had been so good all year, is just incredible. Just utterly incredible. That's all I have to say. I mean, Jane Daniels, speed running rookie of the year. You got to give it to him. You know, I didn't think he'd make it this far. I thought he'd be kind of like CJ Stroud last year, where he wins the wild card, loses in the divisional. And Jane Daniels said, nah, I'm stepping up, I'm getting big, and I'm balling out. 299 yards through the air for 2 touchdowns for Jane Daniels. Also rushed for 51 yards. He's an animal. Brian Robinson Jr., 77 yards and 2 touchdowns. Are you kidding me? Jeremy McNichols, he ran for a touchdown. Dammy Brown, 6 catches, 98 yards. One of the best games I've seen from him. Scary Terry, 4 catches, 87 yards. Already know he got a touchdown. Zach Ertz caught a touchdown. I mean, Jeremy Chin, he was the one that got an interception. Mike Sandristal had 2 interceptions. Quain Martin had an interception. It was absolutely crazy. And the Commanders don't even turn the ball over. Fantastic. Jared Goff throws 3 picks. Jameson Williams throws a pick on a trick play. 313 yards at touchdown. I mean, Jared Goff, I don't know what's going on, but he did not have a good game. Jameer Gibbs, 14 carries, 105 yards, and 2 touchdowns. He was stellar. Jameson Williams had a 61-yard wraparound run. He looked pretty good there. David Montgomery got half the carries and just about a quarter of the yards. Amon-Ra, 8 catches, 137 yards. Jameer Gibbs, 6 catches, 70 yards. Sam Laporta, 6 catches, 51 yards, and a one-handed touchdown catch, which was very nice. But the Lions' season falls short, and the NFC North puts up in a phenomenal 0-3 performance in the playoffs. Very sad. Very sad, if you ask me. I'm safe to say that's embarrassing. That is very embarrassing for the NFC North. But hey, it happens. And Lions, you know, I wasn't too mad they lost. I was not too mad that they lost because they beat the Vikings, and I wasn't happy with that. So the Commanders advanced to the conference championship. But who are they playing? We would find that out on Sunday when the Rams took on the Eagles. And in a snowy showdown, the Eagles prevailed 28-22, which means you're getting an Eagles-Commanders conference championship game. One of those two teams is going to the Super Bowl. Eagles start out stellar, 13-7 in the first. Heading into halftime, it's 13-10. They're leading. They then give up a safety in the third, only are able to kick a field goal. Heading into the fourth, it's back and forth. And then, holy cow, Saquon Barkley rattles off a 61-yard run. I think it was over 60 yards, actually. It was phenomenal. And the Eagles hang on 28-22 as they force a 4-and-out from the Rams to end the game. Phenomenal work. Phenomenal work from this Eagles defense. They were the real key in this one. It was a stellar performance. Matthew Stafford, 324 yards and 2 touchdowns. Can't even be mad with him. Really can't. Kyron Williams, 106 yards on the ground. Just couldn't punch it in on the goal line. He just kept getting stuffed. Puka goes for 6 catches, 97 yards. DeMarcus Robinson, 3 catches, 74 yards. Cooper Kupp, 5 catches, 61 yards. Tyler Higbee, 7 catches, 54 yards at a touchdown. And Colby Parkinson had 2 catches, one of which was a touchdown. For the Eagles, Jalen Hurts, 128 yards, 15 for 20. It was snowing so much, they were not throwing the ball at all. They were running it, and running it they did. Saquon, 205 yards, 2 touchdowns. Doesn't get much better than that. Jalen Hurts, 7 carries, 70 yards, and a 30-yard touchdown run. He had like a 30 or 40-yard touchdown run. It was absolutely immaculate. Goddard, 56 yards. Saquon, 27 yards. Devontae Smith, 21 yards. A.J. Brown, 14 yards. They didn't throw the ball a lot. They really didn't. It was a running game for the Eagles, and it worked. And they beat them to it, and now they're advancing to the conference championship. And man, that's a 50-50 game. You know, Commanders and Eagles gave us some great games during the regular season. And some people may think, like, hey, this is going to be an easy Eagles victory when we get to this conference game. But I think the Commanders have a real shot to beat them in advance to the Super Bowl. And if you're a Commanders team, I mean, we were talking about, you know, Coach of the Year. When you think of Coach of the Year, it's got to be Dan Quinn. It's got to be Dan Quinn. The Commanders went 5-11? 5-12 last year. It was abysmal. They had an awful season last year. And now they're making a conference championship appearance. They now have the rookie of the year. I mean, Jane Daniels has put the whole league on notice that he is the best rookie QB in this past draft. Phenomenal work, and I'm super excited for that game when it takes place. But we had the best game of the NFL divisional round, and oddly, it was the best game. It oddly was the best game. Being last, it was supposed to be the best game. It was Bills and Ravens. And the Bills, 27-25, come out on top in a barn burner. First quarter, 7-7. Then Bills kind of take over. It's 21-10 as we head into the halftime. And then third quarter rolls around, 9-0 third quarter for the Ravens. Heading into the fourth, it is anyone's ball game. 2 field goals from each team, two field goals from the Bills. We get into the final remaining seconds, under a minute and a half, and the Ravens get a big touchdown. Ravens get a massive touchdown, and then on a two-point conversion attempt, Lamar Jackson hits a wide open falling, if you will. Kind of, I don't even know what you want to call him. He's kind of just like falling backwards, ready to catch the ball. Mark Andrews, and Mark drops the ball, and the Ravens lose the game. So sad. So sad, if you ask me. It was tough. It was tough for the Ravens, and you know, this wasn't Lamar Jackson's fault. He successfully led a game-tying drive. He successfully hit a wide-open guy, and he dropped it. And there's nothing more you can do about that, and I think that sucks. I think that sucks if you're Lamar Jackson. And it's, you know, it's just another year. Another year Lamar hasn't even made it to the championship game, and another year he will not be making a Super Bowl appearance. But that's just the Bills for you. Their defense was the real all-stars of this game, and when they needed to hang on most, they did. For the Ravens, Lamar Jackson, 254 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a pick. Also rushed for 39 yards. Derrick Henry, 84 yards on the ground and a touchdown. Isaiah Likely and Rashad Bateman catching the only touchdowns of the day through the air. For the Bills, Josh Allen, 127 yards, just making a little short passes here and there. James Cook rushed for 67 yards. Ray Davis punched in a touchdown, and Josh Allen rushed for 2 touchdowns on the game. Khalil Shakir, 6 catches, 67 yards, was only the real one impacting the passing game. But there you have it, folks. Bills and Chiefs will be your AFC conference championship game. So Bills, Chiefs, Eagles, and Commanders, one of those four teams will be your Super Bowl champion. Early predictions from me, I gotta go with the Eagles and the Bills. Okay, I think if there's going to be any team that beats this Chiefs team, it's the Bills. You know, the Chiefs team, I really only consider them having lost one game this season because they benched every single starter and some of their second stringers in that season finale against the Broncos. The only team to actually beat a fully healthy starting Chiefs team, offensive and defensively wise, was this Bills team. And they managed to do it at home, so we'll have to see if being on the road really impacts that, but I got to go with the Bills all day, and whether it's Bills Commanders, whether it's Bills and Eagles, I think that'll be a great Super Bowl. But if the Chiefs make it again, you know, we already saw Chiefs-Eagles. We saw how that played out, and unless Jaden Daniels is apparently the greatest rookie quarterback of all time, I don't think the Commanders have a chance against the Chiefs, should they play. But we'll have to see. Exciting stuff all around. The divisional games were much better than the wild card games. I'll say that for certain, especially as a Vikings fan. But with that, folks, let's get into our UFC 311 recap, our reactions to every fight. This was a fantastic way to open the pay-per-view slate for 2025, and it has set the bar high, especially for a fight of the year, maybe some knockouts of the year, main events of the year. Let's look at it. Picks-wise, for UFC 311, we did stellar, 9-4 on the entire card and 4-1 on the main card. I mean, I will always take going 4-1 on the main card. And we kick things off to Girlin Beckoff and Clayton Carpenter. And just as we correctly thought, I think the majority of people thought, this was too big of a opportunity for Clayton Carpenter against the man in Tahir Ulembekov, but he didn't do too bad. You know, 30-27, 30-27. Rafael Davis gave him one of the three rounds, but other than that, Tahir Ulembekov did pretty good for himself. Both men landed 42 significant strikes, 100 total strikes for Tahir, 86 for Clayton. 3 of 6 on takedowns for Tahir gives him just under 7 minutes of control time. Clayton goes 1 of 4 on takedowns for 3 minutes of control time. Round one, I would say, was probably a very close round. Tahir got the better of him on the takedowns, winning that one. In round two, Clayton had more significant strikes and landed a takedown of his own. Round three comes around. It was all Tahir Ulembekov, and he extends his win streak to 3, professional record to 16-2, and he's looking good. He's looking good. He called out the champion, Alexander Pantoa, which I don't see happening, but he is currently ranked number 11. I would move him up to 9. In the rankings personally, and I would give him someone like the 7th ranked Alex Pereira's, maybe the number 3 ranked Amir Albazi. You could even give him number 5 ranked Tetsuro Taera. There's a lot of options for Tahir Ulembekov, but he's part of the Khabib camp. He did pretty good, and just as expected, he got the win. Clayton Carpenter, unfortunately, loses his O, if you will, as he's 8-1 now. But seeing how he can hang with someone of Tahir Ulembekov's stature, you know, putting him against the Cody Durden, putting him against even, I'd say, a, you know, who Joshua Van just fight. I don't know if Joshua Van is someone of caliber, but Clayton Carpenter is definitely a high-level flyweight, and we'll probably see him down the rank, down in the future we'll see him in the rankings. But for now, let's just have him fight some other hungry up-and-comers and not feed him to someone like Tagir Limbekov, for example. So Tagir, definitely getting a top 10 opponent next in my perspective. We'll see how he does in that future matchup. Next up, head to the men's bantamweight division. One thing I want to say about this card is that it built on itself with every single fight. It built on itself. Every fight got better than better than better. And the final prelims were better than the early prelims. And the main card got better as it went along. In this one, Bernardo Sopage beats Ricky Tercios 30-27, 30-27, and a 29-28 across the scorecards. Unanimous decision for Bernardo Sopage. And he was the favorite accordingly. And did we need to do 12-3 now record for him, and he picks up his first UFC win. 81 significant strikes to 78, including a round 3 knockdown. 113 total strikes to 97 gives Ricky more total strikes. He goes 1 of 9 on takedowns for just under 2 minutes of control time. Bernardo goes 2 of 3 for 2.5 minutes on the dot of control time. Round 1, Ricky landed more significant strikes, and, you know, he landed more in round 1 and 2, but in terms of power strikes, everything went to Bernardo. Ricky was just landing some clean shots, nothing really doing any damage. When Bernardo landed, you could really tell it more, and when we got into round 3, it was anyone's fight pretty much, and Bernardo just really showed out, you could say. I mean, 38-23, outstriking him in round 3, landed a knockdown, almost finished him. This was domination from Bernardo Sopage. For Ricky Tercios, he's now on a 2-fight losing streak. He is 1-3 in his last 4, and he is 2-3 in the UFC. He's just not that good. Just not that good. I think they might cut him. They might feed him to another hungry up-and-comer, someone we might talk about in a second. But for Bernardo Sopage, I mean, you're going to have a lot of options. I already have an idea of someone he could fight next. We're going to already mention next. But he's clearly good. Clearly talented. And he's repping Albania. And then guess what? You made the Albanians proud, Bernardo. Good work. After that, we had another bantamweight matchup as Muin Gafurov upsets Rinya Nakamura. Rinya came in as a minus 500 favorite, and Muin manhandled him. You know, he dropped him in round number 2. Didn't give him a chance throughout the entire fight. Rinya just looked out of place. You know, I saw some people on Twitter saying he might have been injured. That would have to be my guess. You know, he didn't really do anything the entire fight. He got outstruck in rounds 1 and 2, outstruck him by 1 in round 3, but Muin Gafurov just had his number. Had one submission attempt in the 3rd that he almost got him with. I mean, it was just domination from Muin Gafurov. And the stats, you know, they're pretty low, and you're going to see that there wasn't too much excitement, but Muin Gafurov was really silencing all the doubters in this one. And Muin Gafurov, 2-fight win streak now, 20-6 professionally. I mean, this is exactly what he needed for his career. Rinya Nakamura becomes the second man on this card to lose his O. He's now 9-1. So if I'm matchmaking these guys, I think Bernardo Sopage versus Muin Gafurov would be a great fight. And I think Rinya Nakamura could take on someone like Ricky Tercios. I mean, it just matches up perfectly right there, if you ask me. But Rinya was someone, seriously, looking at the rankings, I thought he could beat some guys. But after this fight against Muin, he definitely needs some more practice. Following that, we had our first women's matchup of the evening, and as I say that, I realize it was our only women's fight of the evening, but I was happy with the outcome, as the number 13th ranked Aline Perez beat the number 9 ranked Carol Rosa in the women's bantamweight division, unanimous decision, and we predicted Aline Perez would have the biggest rise in the women's bantamweight division. This is exactly how you start out the year. I love this. Throughout the whole fight, Aline Perez getting better of her in most exchanges, close overall. 2 of 8 on takedowns, 4 minutes and 15 seconds control time. She capitalized that in rounds 1 and 2, and then round 3 really showed the striking. 33 of 24 outstruck her significantly. Aline Perez, dominant, loved it. 12 and 2 now record for her, and a 5-fight winning streak. Don't get much better than that. For Carol Rosa, she's just gone win-loss since 2022. So Carol Rosa not often is in a boring fight, but unfortunately just isn't getting any wins that she needs to. Aline Perez, she'll move to the number 9 spot in the rankings. I mean, what's next for her? The number 6th ranked Irene Aldana? The number 6th ranked Mauro Bueno Silva? Maybe the loser of Macy Jason and Norma Dumont? Maybe Kelvin Vieira? There are so many options, if you ask me, for Aline Perez. I'm excited to see what comes next. As for Carol Rosa, it's got to be an up-and-comer like Jacqueline Cavalcante, Julia Avila, Chelsea Chandler. I like the Jacqueline Cavalcante fight. I saw that post on Instagram. I think that could be a fun fight. But Aileen Perez, getting it done, made me happy. And you know what? Irene Aldana or Mayra Bueno Silva would be excellent opponents next for her. I say make that happen. Lightweight action was the final fight we had with a decision for a while. I mean, holy cow, it's always boring when we open the card with decision after decision after decision. And, you know, I was debating picking Diego Pereira, but part of me was like, you know what, I think Rand Dawson is going to grapple him to death. Sure enough, 6 of 11, 10 minutes, 50 seconds of control time. Grant Dawson did just that. 3 takedowns in round 1 for 3 minutes, 11 seconds control time. Round 2, 1 of 2 on takedowns for 3 minutes, 44 seconds control time. And round 3, the most dominant, 2 of 4, 3 minutes, 55 seconds of control time. Grant Dawson manhandles Diego Ferreira. Grant Dawson 23-2 now and on a 3-fight winning streak. Good stuff for him. A big win over Diego Ferreira, potentially the biggest of his career. This was kind of a humbling experience for Diego Ferreira, and it was kind of just the essence of Diego kept willingly engaging him on the ground. Like, you know, he kept thinking once he brought it to the ground, he could maybe do something, but, you know, he just never really let the hands go, and Grant never really was even in worry of that. You know, he was landing some ground and pound here and there, was trying to get some submission attempts, never really had an official one. And Grant Dawson, big win in the men's lightweight division. For Diego, it's tough to say what's going to be next for Diego. You know, there's always a lightweight that needs someone to fight to get up closer in the rankings. And I don't really have anyone in mind particularly at lightweight. There's a ton of people. But in terms of Grant Dawson, he's always been on the verge of the rankings. And I say we reward him with Benoit St. Denis. I think that would be a great opportunity for Benoit to prove himself over someone and for Grant Dawson to see test the rankings again, if you will. Diego Ferreira could potentially take on Bobby King Green. That could be a fun fight you do. But other than that, you know, Diego Ferreira, he's no youngin. Diego Ferreira is no youngin. He's 39 years old. He's had a pretty stellar career. If he hangs him up, I don't think anyone would be too mad. But Grant Dawson versus Benoit St. Denis would be a fantastic fight. And King Green, Diego Ferreira, someone's going to sleep. After that, we had a light heavyweight action, and we got our first finish of the night as the number 13th ranked Bogdan Guskov beat the short-notice Billy Alencana with a round 2 guillotine choke, a shocking round 2 guillotine choke, might I add. Billy Alencana starts the fight, takes Bogdan down, takes his back immediately, and I was like, oh my gosh, we're about to see a massive upset right now. Has his back, has full control time. Billy is mauling him, 3 minutes, 40 seconds of control time. Bogdan reverses it in the final 30 seconds of the fight. He locks up a rear naked choke. So as the round ends, a full rear naked choke is being held in and Billy is saved at the bell. Round 2 comes around. Look, Billy Alcana, 29 years young. He is 7-1. He is so green. He almost finished him in round 1. He had no stamina in round 2. He had no stamina. Bogdan laid into him. Eventually, Billy found himself on the ground. Bogdan locked on a guillotine choke and Bogdan Guskov. Holy cow, what was this for him? This was his 3rd career submission. 3rd career submission for Bogdan Guskov. Excellent work. Excellent work for Bogdan. I didn't doubt it for a second. 3-fight win streak now. 3 wins in the UFC. 3 finishes. It don't get much better than that for Bogdan Guskov. He was supposed to fight the number 10 ranked Johnny Walker. Let's just rebook that. Okay, let's just rebook that. Someone's getting finished in that fight, and I'm excited for it. As for Billy, I don't know if they're going to bring him back, but the light heavyweight division could always use someone entertaining. There are tons of unranked light heavyweights that I'm sure he could fight, you know. I think Omar Sy has a fight coming up against someone, and Omar Sy could be a fun opponent if he loses that one or whoever he beats in that fight. I think that's going down in London, March 22nd. We'll have to see. But Bogdan Guskov gets the win here, and it's always fun when you predict someone's going to win, and they win. After that, we had a middleweight matchup between Zachary Reese and Azamat Bekov. Azamat taking this fight on short notice. And, you know, this was going pretty good for Reese. Then Azamat landed a takedown. And this was something straight out of EA Sports UFC 5 where you take your opponent down, you get into full guard, and you just beat him up. And that's exactly what happened. And Reese was hit with some powerful, powerful ground and pound shots. Now, it didn't come out till after the fight, but a lot of them, including the damaging ones, were to the back of the head. And there's actually cuts on the back of the head of Zachary Reese. So Azamat, unfortunately, was getting this done with some back of the head shots. But I mean, in the moment, he was dominating Reese. Nonetheless, I thought Reese would get it done, so I can happily admit I was wrong. And Azamat Bekov looked pretty damn good in this. He looked pretty damn good, if you ask me. And he's going to be, where is he now? I never know on my note sheet, because they sometimes move the fights around. Azamat Bekov getting his 7th straight win, his 7th knockout of his career. Good stuff for Azamat Bekov. Welcome to the men's middleweight division. Welcome to it. You have earned a spot in the men's middleweight division, and there's plenty of opportunities for you. How about Kevin Holland? Let's make him fight Kevin Holland or something. No, I'm sure there's someone he could take on. He's a fun fighter. He's a good cat. We'll see how he does along the way. But Zachary Reese, unfortunately, getting finished again. It was he just looked weird. He shaved his head, grew out his beard. I like the mullet look. He performed much better when he had a mullet. With that, we got into our final prelim of the night. You witnessed one of the biggest UFC upsets you're going to see for a long time, maybe the whole year, as, and I quote, the plus 900 underdog, Ryony Barcelos beats the minus 1,400 favorite, Peyton Talbot. Peyton Talbot humbled on just a crazy scale. Crazy scale. Ryony grapples him to death. 8 of 15 on takedowns, just under 10 minutes of control time. Pure domination. Pure and utter domination. This was beautiful to see. Round one, 4 minutes, 51 seconds of control time. That should give you a perspective. 9 seconds of this fight, Browdy was not in control for that round. Round two, Peyton did much better on the feet, still taken down 3 times, half the round controlled. Round three, he tried to do his best, was still getting dominated. Ryony Barcelos, may you humbling everyone, doing what he does best. Good freaking work. 2-fight win streak now for Ryony Barcelos. Mind you, this guy is 37 years old. Okay, Ryony Barcelos is on the tail end of his career, and he's out here beating prospects 11 years younger than him. Peyton Talbot losing his O as well. Bad night for undefeated fighters. I think Ricky Tercios is a perfect bounce back fight for Peyton Talbot. This was clearly too high of the competition for him. As for Ryony Barcelos, Muin Gafurov or Bernardo Sopaj could be fun opponents there. It's just tough to see. Did not see Peyton Talbot getting dominated like this, but good job to Ryony Barcelos, 37 years old, earning himself a little extra bonus money, getting that win and show. So good prelims overall. Honestly, not the best ever, but it was worth it when we got into the main card. Kicking things off, middleweight action as Reiner Day Ritter took on Kevin Holland. And all Reiner was saying is, hey, I'm going to go in there. I'm going to take him down, submit him. That's what I'm going to do. This fight lasted 3 minutes, 31 seconds. It didn't take but 6 seconds for Reiner to hit him with a jab, take him down, get into his back position, and hit him with a rear naked choke. Quite literally, that is exactly what happened. Reiner Day Ritter said he was going to submit him. Absolutely phenomenal. 2 wins in the UFC now, 2 submissions, and that adds to a submission total of 14 career submissions, make it 17 career finishes of 19 wins. Reiner Day Ritter, welcome to the UFC. And he called out a top 15 opponent. He called out top 5. I think top 15 is a perfect opportunity for Reiner to get into the rankings. If you're asking me, you have the 13th ranked Jack Hermanson. That's a good option. The number 9 ranked Brendan Allen, that could be a fun option, depending on how he does against Anthony Hernandez. You also have Marvin Vettori at 7. He hasn't fought since 2023. Maybe the loser of Nazarene Imavov and Adesanya. That could be a fun fight. I think the sky's the limit for Reiner Day Ritter. He's so happy-go-lucky. He's always smiling, and he's out here getting finishes. And we thought he'd get the finish. Great to see. As for Kevin Holland, this was a really bad loss for Kevin. This was a really bad loss. It didn't seem like he was taking this fight seriously at all. He thought it'd be a walk in the park. And he's now sitting at 1-4 in his last 5. He's been finished in round 1, technically, in his last 2. And when we really look at the last stretch of his career, over the last, since 2023, if you will, he's gone 3-4. And I don't know why he's at middleweight. It really makes no sense to me. He just always has done better at welterweight. So I think if Kevin's going to stay at middleweight, I saw someone on Instagram, I think it was MMA Theory, pose he fights Brad Tavares. That could be a potential fight for Kevin Holland if he wants to go back to welterweight. There's always a Vicente Luque fight. There's I guess no one really in the rankings. I think the ranking days of Kevin Holland are over for now. And Kevin Holland necessarily, he's only 32 years old. He wants to get to 50 total UFC fights, but you have to keep winning. And he's not necessarily in a good spot, and he just really has to assess what he's going to do here. So Kevin Holland, he's in flux. He could quite honestly fight anyone, anywhere. But, I mean, Rene de Ridder is the real star of this, as he's going to be getting himself a top 10, top 15 opponent, and he's trying to earn himself a title shot. Good stuff. He's as talented as he claims he is. After that, we got our first performance bonus of the night as the number 6 ranked Halton Almeida defeated the number 7th ranked Sergey Spivak with a round 1 TKO. Halton Almeida, goodness me. Upgrade to the main card, of course, because we're going to talk about in a second how we actually lost a main card fight. But Halton Almeida, good stuff from him. His 8th career knockout, his 21st career finish. This one started out, and Sergey Spivak shockingly took down Halton Almeida before eventually Halton was able to reverse it, get into top position before Spivak reversed it. Absolutely crazy. They get back to the feet. Halton Almeida takes Spivak down, gets into top control from back, lays on some nasty ground and pound, and Halton Almeida is back in the win category. Make it 2 straight wins, 2 straight round one finishes since losing to Curtis Blaydes last March. Good stuff for Halton Almeida. As for Sergey Spivak, I mean, this was expected. This was so expected. I mean, come on. This dude hasn't gone the distance since 2021. So Sergey Spivak is usually a round one fighter, but tough loss for him. A lot of options for Sergey Spivak in the men's heavyweight division. You of course have the winner of Marcin Tybura and Mick Parkin. That fight's coming up. You have the loser of Jarzynia Rozenstruik and Sergey Pavlovich, which is coming up. You have Derek Lewis. You got Ty Tuivasa in there. There's a lot of options. There's a lot of options in the men's heavyweight division. But Sergey Spivak, I mean, he was looking pretty good. This is the best he's ever looked, despite getting finished in round number one. Now, as for Halton Almeida, I mean, this guy showed true grit in this. He was about to get finished by Sergey Spivak. Was able to reverse it, is able to get into top position, and he gets another finish, and he looked in excellent shape. Had a great call-out of Ciryl Gane. All right, Ciryl Gane call-out is fantastic. Halton will probably remain ranked at number 6 since Curtis Blaydes is at 5. So I think Halton Almeida's going to remain at 6. But he called out Ciryl Gane. That fight's perfect. And he said if Tom Aspinall doesn't fight Jon Jones, he wants the Tom Aspinall fight. I like both of those options. Personally, the Ciryl Gane one is going to be what happens. They're going to punish Ciryl Gane for that win over Alexander Volkov. But this one was fun. This one was fun, especially ending in round number 1. And Halton Almeida is such a savage. He truly is, and he can finish you with a submission, with a TKO, and he showed it in this one. Good win for Almeida, and he kicks his 2025 off with a bang. Now, we get into Jiří Procházka, Jamahal Hill. This was probably the fight I was most excited for. You know, huge Jiří Procházka fan, and this fight delivered on epic proportions. Jiří gets a performance of the night for the round 3 knockout, and from the get-go, this was entertaining. Round 1, Jiří almost knocked out Hill. He dropped him. Hill was able to get back to his feet. And Jamahal Hill, this has been the best I've seen him. You know, for some guy who has only fought twice since January of 2023, he did pretty good in this one. Round 2, Jamahal actually outstruck Jiří 38-22, fighting his way back. But round 3 comes around, and you know, there's one thing you can't do with Jiří. It's literally the one thing you can't do. You can't get into a fist fight. That's exactly what happened. Jamahal gets caught, gets hit with some ground and pound, gets back to his feet, eventually falls down, and that was that. Jiří Procházka back in the win category. I mean, come on. He's got win-loss the last 2 years. The only man to beat him has been Alex Pereira. Great win for Jiří, and how about career-wise? 31-5 with one draw, and give Jiří his 27th career knockout. His 30th career finish, he's only ever won one fight by going the distance. It's absolutely insane. Love it. This would have won fight of the night for me if the co-main event hadn't have happened. But Jiri's just an absolute dog. Just such an absolute dog for this one. And he's in a good spot now. He is really in a good spot. He, of course, wanted to fight Alex Pereira next. I love that. Especially if Magomed Ankalaev beats Pereira. That's a fight you could do right there. There's also Jan Blachowicz versus Carlos Ulbrich. The winner of that versus Jiří would be fantastic. The winner of Jan Blachowicz versus Carlos Ulbrich taking on Jiří, that would be fun. I think there's a lot of options for Jiří Procházka. I'll be interested to see which one he lands with. For Jamahal Hill, I just think he needs to take on someone lower. Now, it's obviously not easier, you know, but you got Khalil Roundtree Jr., Nikita Krylov, Osmat Mirzakhanov. You could even have him take on Alexander Rokic to give one of them an opportunity to bounce up in the ring. rankings. I think Jamal will be back. I think he'll be better than ever. And, you know, as much as he's lost the Law fans, this was a dogfight. And, you know, for going toe-to-toe with Jerry Brosco, who we know is an absolute savage, he gets a thumbs up for me. But another knockout on the main card. This was just super fun all around. Now, we get into the co-main event. Mirab Dovizioso, Umar Nurmagomedov. And I gotta say, Mirab, you have done it to me yet again, as we have our official fight of the year so far. I'm booking it right now. This is my fight of the year as of right now. As these two go the distance, this was at 48-47. I don't know why Chris Crowley had it 49-46. This was 48-47 to Mirab. This was fantastic. This was action-packed from the get-go. Mirab Dovizioso setting the takedown record for the UFC, passing George St. Pierre in this fight. From the get-go, round one, pretty entertaining. Umar took round one. I think we can all agree Umar took round one. Round two comes around. Umar took that one, too. Landed a takedown on Mirab. So now we're kind of like, you know, these were competitive rounds, but Umar's up 2-0. Round three was the game-changing round. Now, this was the round, I think, if you'd have scored it for Umar, he'd have won the fight. But Mirab most likely won this from everyone's point of view. Both men landed a takedown, but more control time to Umar. Yet on the feet, Mirab was looking better. It was just how it went. Round four, this is where Mirab took over. 4 of 9 on takedowns, minute of control time, 36 significant strikes to 21. He was taunting Umar. And then round five comes around. Round five, and despite getting outstruck significantly, he goes 2 of 12 on takedown attempts, taunting Umar. I mean, Umar couldn't land a takedown attempt to save his life. And Mirab retains his belt in spectacular fashion. This was so entertaining. This was a fight of the night. These two were action-packed from the get-go. Now, some information did come out afterwards that Umar broke his hand in round one. I don't know what would have happened had it been healthy, but this was certainly entertaining. I had Umar becoming champion by the end of the year. Maybe a miracle could happen, but as of right now, Mirab Dovizioso is on top of the world, and I absolutely love it. Good stuff for Mirab, and Umar becomes the fourth and final fighter on this card to lose his own. He is now 18-1, but to lose in a fight of the night to one of the greatest bantamweight champions of all time, I think that's okay. Mirab's win streak now stands at 12 freaking wins. And, you know, pound for pound wise, he's at number 7. I'm putting him over Driscus Duplessis at 6 and Bilal Muhammad at 5. He's my number 5 pound for pound fighter on the planet. Mirab Dovizioso, this was fantastic. Now, what's next for these guys? You know, it's always what's next. They're basking in their victory, but what is next? There's a couple options. They want to do the Sean O'Malley rematch. I'm going to be honest. Mirab's aura has increased significantly, and I'm not picking anyone currently in the bantamweight rankings to beat Mirab. Truly, I think Umar is the best opportunity we have. Pyrdjan at 3 is a better striker, but we already saw what will happen, and Mirab's gotten better, I think, since then. Sugar is no difference from the first fight. Corey Sandhagen, he's at least 2 wins away. I don't know what's going to happen with Mirab. I think, if anything, it'd be Alexander Pantoja moving up in weight. That would give Mirab the biggest run for his money. But in my mind, they run back the Sean O'Malley fight because it's a moneymaker, and Mirab beats him again. Unless you see Sean O'Malley shockingly knock him out, we'll have to see. As for Umar, you know, there's a lot of options for him. There's Petr Yan at number 3, but they're both Russian. I don't really see that happening. Davison Figueiredo at 5. He's coming off a loss, which I think could be a fun fight there. Henry Cejudo and Song Yedong, the winner of that fight. Umar needs to rest, fix his hand. He'll be back. He'll be great. This was a fantastic, fantastic co-main event. It's the best title fight of the year so far. Now, you may ask yourself, oh my gosh, Zach, did that mean the main event for the lightweight championship was bad? No, it wasn't bad, but we do need to say this because we didn't say this on the last episode, and that is because Benil Dariush and Hamo Ikano didn't happen, as a day before, Armin Tsarukyan pulls out with a back injury right after the weigh-ins, and Hamo Ikano stepped in on short notice. So Benil Dariush did get paid his win and show money, so that boy got paid, but it was Hamo Ikano taking on Islam Makhachev, and, you know, I predicted Islam would beat him in round one. You know, it was knockout or submission. I said knockout just because I thought he was better on the feet. But as this fight went, lasted 4 minutes, 5 seconds, Hamo Ikano getting the better of him striking, 9-6. So like I said, not a lot. But, you know, Islam waited for his timing, landed a takedown, and got a darce right away. Like, the moment the neck was exposed, he got a darce in. Hanato tap. That was that. I mean, it really, Islam made this look so easy. And, you know, I knew this would be easy for him. I knew he'd get him out of there right away, and that's because Renato Moicano is no different from Bobby Green and Dan Hooker, who he both beat in round number one. Is if you get him to the ground, it's going to be game over. And Islam Makhachev now has the second longest win streak, tied with Kamaru Usman, his buddy, in UFC history at 15 straight wins. And I just want to add some context, is that since 2021, Islam Makhachev has either gotten a finish or been in a fight of the night. I mean, that one fight of the night was a fight of the year contender against Alexander Volkanovski. Other than that, all finishes, this guy does is finish fights. He's an absolute savage. His 13th career submission, 18th career finish. This was too easy for Islam. This was too easy. He's the number 1 pound per pound fighter for a reason. It was just silly. It was silly. And Moicano was super sad. But this is like, you know, Jorge Masvidal getting a title shot. This was Dustin Poirier getting one last title shot. This was those guys getting one last title shot. And Moicano was able to end his career with a title shot here. He still said, you know, he even himself couldn't really say, like, I hope I get back to here, just because it doesn't seem possible. But we'll have to see what happens. For Renato, there's a lot of options. He could fight down against someone like Paddy Pimblett, Joel Alvarez, Jalen Turner. They could give him a Beneil Dariush, a Matheus Gamrot. There's a lot of options for Renato Moicano. I just say you run back the Beneil Dariush fight. You know, he took really no damage. He just got submitted. That was that. So we'll see what happens. But Islam, I mean, this guy is scary. This guy is dominant. He's 27-1 professionally. And Dana White said he's not taking on Armin next. He really isn't taking on Armin. They're going to make Armin fight back for the belt. Even Armin said, okay, I'm down to do that. Now, what's the case going to be? I think it's pretty obvious. You run back Armin versus Charles Oliveira. Mind you, that was a split decision last time out, and Armin got the better of him. Charles had a fantastic fight with Michael Chandler. Winner of that gets the next title shot. Makes perfect sense. There's also talk they might do Islam Bilal Muhammad. You know, there's talk that might happen. So we'll have to see what concurs. I say you do Armin versus Charles. Do it at 314, 315. By the time the summer or fall rolls around, Islam can take on the one of those two. And if he beats those guys, I mean, truly, he needs to fight for a double title shot. He really does. He said he'd move up the duo to 185 and take on Dricus du Plessis. He is so freaking fantastic. But Islam, end of the night with a bang. He is the greatest lightweight champion we have ever seen, I think. You can say that. I think him and Merab are running up the GOAT category. And this was an exciting card. A lot of things are looking up for people. And there's a lot of people that need to go back to the drawing board. You know, you got Ringo Nakamura. You got Peyton Talbot. You got Umar Nurmagomedov all losing their O's. And then you have guys like Islam and Merab just getting another win, getting another title defense. I'll be excited to see how the rest of the year progresses. But that's all we got for UFC 311. It was a fantastic card. I'd say submission of the year is currently Islam Makhachev. Currently best fight of the year and title fight of the year is Merab Dvalishvili versus Umar Nurmagomedov. Looking back to last week at UFC Vegas 101, the Cesar Almeida Abdulrazak Al-Hassan knockout is still the best knockout of the year, but this pay-per-view is definitely going to be hard to contend with, especially with the state of UFC 312. That looks super rough. Now, we don't have a UFC event next weekend, so we'll have to think of something fun we can talk of in terms of UFC, but the next time we do have a UFC event, it will be UFC Saudi Arabia going down February 1st, and I think the prelims start at like 8 in the morning. It's fantastic. You get Israel Adesanya, Nazim Imavov, Sharmagomedov, Michael Page, and Sergey Pavlovich versus Arsenio Rosenstruik. A lot of other fun fights, Saeed Nurmagomedov and C.S. Oliveira, Ikram Akhachev, Andre Munez. It's going to be a fun card. But I mean, Islam Makhachev, he's a pound for pound number one fighter. I think Merab should be number 5. We'll have to see what the rankings look like when we get around to it. But that's all I got for today's episode, guys. Let me know what you guys thought of UFC 311 and the NFL divisional round games, and what stuff you want me to talk about on here. If there's anyone that wants to come on, reach out. I'm always happy to talk with you about anything in the world. I'm an open book. Ladies and gentlemen, have a fantastic week, and as always, guys, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.